What do all gambits need? A queen to play them, of course. In this episode, we talk about the Netflix miniseries Queen's Gambit. There are massive spoilers, mentions of real-life players, a couple of rants, and of course, two kind of tired and goofy podcasters.
Welcome to In Media Les, a podcast where we discuss our favorite queer relationships in media. I'm Chloe.
And I'm Val.
Today we will be discussing the 2020 Netflix miniseries, The Queen's Gambit, starring Anya Taylor-Joy. It's not exactly the most queer. I was thinking, there is a scene where she, like, it's implied that she, like, slept with another woman right before her match in Paris.
Well, with it doesn't really imply as much as show.
Okay, yeah.
She's there in bed with the woman, and they're both in a state. And they flirted before.
Yes, this is true. And I don't know, but part of me is... feels like this is a good fit also because it a lot of it is about Beth Harmon, played by Anya Taylor-Joy, and about her, like, defiance of conventions writ large, whether they're in the chess world, which is ostensibly the theme, but also, like, there's just so many moments in the miniseries where she just rejects convention, whether it's, like, that scene where the two, like, Christian women who are sponsored, like, they're part of some, like, Christian outreach group come over that are, like, sponsoring her trip to Russia. And they're, they're, like, talking about how, like, yes, you were raised in a religious orphanage. And now you're going to spread the mission of the church and blah, blah, blah. And you can just tell how uncomfortable that makes her. And she just kicks them out and says, I'm just going to pay my own way. And then... yeah. There's so many other moments like that where she just rejects conventions in a way that feels kind of transgressive in a way that a queer relationship sometimes can feel.
Yeah. And behavior-wise and different things she does, we can spin it.
That was very specific, Val.
Yeah.
Behavior-wise and things she does.
Exactly. Listen, I am present and aware and trying to participate. And the only thing I can think of is a quote from my sister where she was talking about the book. And she said, it's pretty much the same, except her friend was predatory in that one scene.
Wait, which friend is predatory?
Jolene.
Really?
She said just the one scene. Okay. So who knows? But also, so, like, Jolene is amazing, and I'm super glad they actually didn't put them in any sort of relationship.
Seriously, who plays Jolene? Moses Ingram is spectacular as Jolene, who's, like, a fellow orphan. They're friends when they're orphans, but then Beth gets adopted, and they kind of lose track of each other, and then they reconnect, and Jolene basically helps Beth kind of sober up when she's at her lowest. So yeah, I love Jolene.
Yeah, she's really good. She's also kind of like not so much like a rock for her, because they do lose track of each other for a few years, but she's just someone who got her through the worst part of her life. It was very sweet, and I think she learned a lot from Jolene, the creative cursor and wild child that she was. Because that scene was amazing. Like, when we first see her and she's just, like, yelling at the orderlies or whatever they're called. That made me really fall in love with that character.
It's funny because the moment you mentioned creative cursor, it's like, oh, yes, that scene. Yes.
Yeah.
It's wonderful.
Because it's very creative and it's a lot of cursing. And then she just, like, turns it right off when turning back to look at her friends.
Yeah.
And it's that does it, I think.
It's amazing. Yeah, like, I wish I could just turn on a dime like that.
That's a dangerous power to have.
Yeah, it really is. Huh.
I think let's get back into Beth. So, like, she's pretty much a prodigy in chess.
Absolutely. Right? Yes.
And I really like that she thinks that she has to take these drugs to play well, even though in the end it's kind of proven wrong.
Yeah.
But
they're kind of a crutch because she can do that thing. When she takes the drug, she, like, sees the... It's implied she, like, can see the board, I guess. Like,
because she's so out of it, yeah.
Yeah, but it's not actually helping her. And, like, that's kind of what... In the final game against... what's his name?
The Russian guy.
Borgov.
Yeah.
Borgov. Vasily Borgov. She, like, realizes, no, I could always, you know, do this. And, like, I think it's implied that what she's doing is she's playing out the different games in her head and, like, seeing, like, the possible options and choosing the best one. And whereas before it was implied that, like, drug use helped her do it. It was really just, like, the power was inside her all along.
Exactly. And, like, as a child, the first time she sees the chessboard, she hasn't had those pills. She's not abusing them.
Right.
So it was already there, but because of her circumstances. Did it ever say
what exactly the pills are? I forget.
I don't think they said it, but I think it was like a historical thing that happened in not foster homes, in orphanages, I guess, at that point.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's pretty wild. Although I do have to say, I really like that it was Borgov that kind of got her to snap out of it that final stretch.
Yeah.
Because right after she sleeps with her lady friend, acquaintance, she ends up being late to their match.
Yep.
And she looks really, really bad. And the way he looks at her is such a, like, a dad is disappointed look.
Yeah.
That I felt uncomfortable with it. I'm like, oh no, I'm in trouble.
It's such an amazing look too, because it's not contempt.
Yeah.
But it is very dad like. It's very, yeah, I thought you were better than this.
Yeah, and it works. And the thing is, like, he never is mad at her or is rude to her afterwards either. At the end of the game, they shake hands, like always, and go their own way. But just that look. And you see her wane under it. She just wilts in her chair.
Mm-hmm. And I think that part of that is because she's had such a complicated, you know, like, she's an orphan and then she gets adopted. But then the dad clearly, you know, like, the adoption, the parents clearly wanted, well, like, the mom, it was like to save their marriage. Like, that's why they adopted her. And the dad clearly wants nothing to do with Beth. He expresses that multiple times. And so it's clearly, like, Borgov is, like, this kind of surrogate father figure on some level. And that she wants... It's not just that she wants to beat him, although, I mean, that is her goal. But, like, it's also just, like, she wants him to respect her.
Yeah.
The way that, like, one wants the respect of their parents.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to remember the name of the adopted... I think it's Alma and Alston Wheatley, right?
Yeah, Alma Wheatley. And she's such a great mother.
Oh,
I did
gosh.
Not expect it. This show does those sort of things really well. Like, the way they film things, you would expect those people to do something bad. Like, it's getting set up for something horrible.
Yeah.
But then it turns out that they do want what's best for Beth. And it was great. Because she starts out being, like, very unenthusiastic about letting Beth go to these tournaments.
Yeah.
And then when she sees that they do make money, and now her husband is gone, and she's not making any money, she gets very interested very quickly. And that was such a red flag that I'm glad they went the other way with it.
Yeah, like, you think she's going to be a predator and just take all of Beth's money and, like, screw her over. Especially because Alma, the mom, is, like, an alcoholic. And
she's super depressed. And she also takes medicine for it, which Beth gets into
from
time to time. Probably every time she picks it up from the pharmacy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There's that scene where Beth picks up the medicine for Alma from the pharmacy and, like, fakes that Alma needed more so that she could steal it.
Mm-hmm.
Alma is not, like, I mean, she is taking some of Beth's money, but she does, I feel like, she does act as Beth's manager and accompanies her and supports her as she gets better and better.
And gets really into chess, like, not into the chess itself, but into watching her daughter win and enjoy it.
She's proud of Beth, definitely.
And I think the thing that, like, saves it most for me is the fact that she leaves most money to Beth. Like, she doesn't take her 50%. She leaves almost all money with Beth.
And then takes how much does she take exactly?
I don't remember, but it was a fairly small percentage.
Yeah, it wasn't...
At that point, we didn't really care. Yeah.
Yeah. At first, you're just like, oh, God, she's going to take all of Beth's money, and this is going to be, like, all those, like, child actors you always hear about who, like, their parents, like, exploit their talent and then take all their money and leave them broke when they become adults. But no, Beth is left able to, like, purchase the home because, long story short, Alma dies.
Mm-hmm. That was super sad.
Of, like, hepatitis, probably driven by alcoholism. Yeah, it's a really sad moment. But then it turns out that Alma and the husband never quite, I guess, divorced.
Yeah.
And the house went to him that Beth had been living in. And he basically was like, okay, well, I have that house. I'm going to sell it. And Beth was like, I'm just going to buy it from you. So Beth clearly had enough money that she could just buy a house, which is...
Decided over a phone call.
Yeah.
A very difficult and frustrating phone call.
Yeah. And then Beth remodeled the whole place. So she clearly had enough money that she could do stuff like that. The remodeling was awesome. She could spiral
really well. Yeah, that house is funky.
Yeah, gotta love that mid-century modern vibes.
Would not choose it for myself, but seeing it on set, definitely great.
It's one of those things where you, like, go all in on it and it looks great. You can't have half measures.
Yes.
As someone who's been decorating a new place
recently. So you copied it exactly, is what I'm understanding.
Yes. My, if you come over to where I live, you will be like, wow, I'm walking into the set of Queen's Gambit. This is Beth Harmon's house.
Wallpapers galore.
Yeah. Man, it's so 1970s in here. There's not even an internet connection. That's how 1970s it is up in here. Anyway, now that... I don't know why... This is going to be a very goofy episode.
I feel like the last few have definitely been... much goofier.
I feel like we also need to talk about some of the, like, other male figures in her life.
Yes.
Because, I mean, the first one that comes to mind is Harry. Good old Harry. Aw. He's just so...
He's very good. I expected him to be a much worse character, which is what I say, I think, for every single person in the show. They keep doing this thing where the first time we meet someone, they give off very nasty vibes. And then... after, like, two scenes with them, we realize that, no, they're actually very good and kind people.
Yeah, and he's portrayed by Dudley Dursley, a.k.a. Harry Melling, in quite the glow-up, I would say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely looks, much better in this role.
Yeah, he looks really good. Beth beats him in a chess tournament, and then they become friends, and kind of, they hook up once, and... Beth is disappointed by it and, like, makes it clear that she was disappointed by it. Which, again, is just one of those things where, like, at the time, you know, you think about how, like, so many women, I guess, in the, like, 60s and 70s were just having probably pretty unfulfilling relationships. You know, the sexual revolution was just kind of starting. Mm-hmm. And the fact that she's just like, no, that wasn't good. It's kind of amazing. I mean, she doesn't say in such words, but, like, she makes it clear that she was... Yeah. And then when she has sex with... who was it that she has sex with? And then she's like, oh, that's what it's supposed to feel like.
Benny Watts. Who's also a good boy.
He's so goofy looking. I love him.
He's just cursed to exist in existence where everyone just sees him as the kid he was in, like, every other movie. He's been in a million movies. That's why everyone knows him. But he's always played, like, secondary, tertiary characters.
So he's a lot older than I thought. Born in 1990. He's 32. Wow. He's
a grown man cursed with a baby face.
Yeah. I mean, he's a beautiful boy.
That mustache is working for him, though.
Yeah, I just find it funny that the like outfit he wears for that one match where he's wearing this like duster with this like Indiana Jones hat, and it's so like, as someone who was around a lot of like nerdy kids in high school, as a nerd myself, like sure, there are a lot of nerdy kids who wear a lot of weird outfits. Like I feel like that felt like very on point. Like I'm like, yeah, there was definitely a guy in my, what was it, Science Olympiad Club, who would show up, and he was always wearing this, like, it was just this weird long jacket. It wasn't a duster. I don't know what even to call it. And then he would always wear a beanie, like, even when it was, like, summertime. And it was just, like, such a weird outfit. And that's what Benny reminded me of. I was just like, yeah, he's really smart. And smart people sometimes can be really weird, too. And that was Benny. But then you get to know him. Again, this is one of those things where he's kind of presented at first as kind of this villain. Like, he's this smug guy who's so good at chess. And I think he beats Beth at first. And then later she beats him in Mexico, right? Is that what happens? I think that's what happens.
And then, like, he's just from New York is what we find out. That's why he's so weird.
Yep, that explains it all. Oh, no, I think it was in Ohio.
She lost a couple of times to him. And then she finally beats him. Yeah. And it's not huge deal.
And then he ends up helping her prepare for her match against Borgov, like, becomes one of her biggest supporters.
Not only that, but, like, all of the other guys from her childhood competitions come together and train her.
Oh, and yeah. Matt and Mike, awesome. I think, are the two guys.
Yeah, the twins. Then we get Harry comes twins? In. Yeah.
Oh, I thought they were the a gay face. Couple.
One of us is
right.
I
just thought they looked similar, and that's because they're a couple.
That's very fair. I'm very sure they're twins.
Oh, they are twins.
Yeah, same face. Look, it's okay.
Okay, well, while I'm on the thoughts of Matt and Mike, though, there's this amazing scene during the Mexico tournament where Matt and Mike are talking to Beth, and Alma walks by, who's been seeing, like, her pen pal in Mexico. Manuel, I think his name is.
I love that scene.
And one of them, Matt or Mike, I don't know, they're kind of interchangeable in my head, but one says, oh, your mom has a new friend. And Beth, like, lists off all the things they've been doing, and then she says, I'm pretty sure they're effing. I'm going to censor myself because this is a family podcast. No. And then she gets this like, kind of does this amazing look, like kind of a strange mix of like, yeah, go mom. And also like, I know their secret. And then Matt and Mike look at each other like, what the heck? Why do you know, like, because this, again, this is like the 1960s. You don't just blurt that sort of thing out. even, you know, like even with, you know, the kind of sexual revolution that was happening at the time, that was just like very, that was a lot. And they just give them each other's look like, who is this woman, Beth? I clipped it. I like, Netflix, please don't get mad at me, but I used to wait that to get access to that clip and made a clip of it so I could make a GIF because I liked it so much. Please don't sue me.
They already sent the season to us.
Yeah, I can hear the lawyers, the sirens of the lawyers arriving outside to take all my possessions. It was nice knowing you, Justice. I have to go away for a while. Anyway.
Yeah.
There's the journalist, D.L. Towns. Do we ever learn his name? I think it's D.L. Towns.
I don't know. I just know him by Towns. I don't remember if he ever says his first name. He was also so creepy. And then when Beth tried to go for it, he's like, oh, no, honey, I have a boyfriend.
Yeah, that scene was so awkward. That scene was so powerfully awkward. You just felt it. Because I feel like we've probably, a lot of us have been there in that situation where you, like, I don't know, you, like, think that, you know, like, the whole point of what you know, like you thought like, oh, this was a date and I'm going back to their hotel room. And, you know, like they've been kind of flirty with me. And now, you know, now's the time to seal the deal. And then their partner walks in. This time, Town's partner walks in his boxers. And it's just like, oh,
well, oof. Here's the thing. Like, he was putting it on way too thick. He was flirting the whole time. Even though he gave off that air of, like, this is a child. So, I don't know. Like, out of all the characters, he's the most creepy. Because he like, we can see that he sees her as a very young woman. And is very clearly considering himself to be, like, the older person. And still he flirted. Not even flirted, but, like, he did that thing where he looked very desirable on purpose. You know what I mean? Like, on purpose.
Yeah.
He did stuff.
He was teasing her.
Yes, thank
that's
you.
That's the word. He was teasing her a bit.
And then in the end, when, like, his boyfriend is there, I felt so, so bad for Beth. Just so bad for her. Even though I was happy that he was not, like, a pedophile.
Yeah.
I was so upset in her stead. Because, like, dude, this has been happening for months and months. You've been kind of, like, flirty with her.
Yeah.
And now that she finally thinks she's about to score, you do this? God.
Maybe he thought, like, as a journalist, this was a way to get access to her. And, like, you know, she's this big name in the chess world. And I get, if I just, like, tease her a little bit and lead her on a little bit, I can continue to, like,
he's also a photographer.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Maybe he's just like, I'm going to take pictures of her in a very specific state.
Yeah.
And I'm gay, so it's fine. Which, come on. No, it's not.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot to be read into there where it's, there is that element where sometimes gay men feel like they can sexualize women and that makes it okay sometimes because they're gay, but it doesn't, like, it's still sexualizing women in a weird way. I don't know. There's a lot of discourse about that in certain places. Anyway, I don't know where I'm going with this.
Okay, you gotta tell me the name of the woman she sleeps with because I cannot for the life of me remember it.
She's a French woman.
Uh-huh.
And her
She's name... very cool. She's very mean.
come on. I will pull this out. I will get this.
Cleo. Is it Cleo?
Cleo. That sounds right.
It is Cleo.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. Cleo was definitely with Benny, right? They had something going on. They were way too comfortable and uncomfortable with each other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I don't know. The theory I had about Cleo is that maybe she was like a Russian plant.
She wasn't a plant. She was a lady.
You know what I mean.
Hey-o.
Oh, my gosh. No, she just like that she's there to distract Beth, but because she knows, or because the Russians, you know, like,
yeah, it's the Cold War.
As we have learned, especially also with the, like, doping scandal in the current Olympics, like, you know.
Look, there's always doping scandals.
Russian competitors have not been above a little bit of fingers on the scale. And so it wouldn't, I don't know, it wouldn't surprise me if Cleo was, like, being paid, like, I don't know, maybe they just gave her some money and said, take this money and go party with Beth.
If she was a plant, she was very bad at it because she slept through the point where she had to report to my people because she was just as late as Beth,
but if, maybe that was more the so. Point maybe it was just it wasn't necessarily like make her late, because then I think Cleo would have balked at that because she would have been like, I'm not gonna openly sabotage, you know, my friend's career, but take her out for a night on the town, I can do that. I don't know, we're reading a lot into a character who appears for maybe 5 minutes.
Not even that, come on.
Yeah.
It's,
maybe like 2 minutes.
I feel like she's a party girl and is very good at it.
Yes.
Because she is French.
But if you're good at something, don't do it for free. That's what the Joker taught us.
Well, okay. We do have to listen to the Joker. You are right.
Yeah.
Very inspirational and
we live figure. In a society.
But at the same time, like, She did hint that she was going to be at the tournament in France.
Yeah.
And she did say, hey, hit me up. But also, yeah. Like, they're both hot. They're both young. She seems to be into chess players, and Beth is a fairly new and very strong chess player.
I mean, who isn't into hot young chess players?
To each their own, definitely. I don't know. I haven't met any chess players. Yeah. So who knows? But yeah, like, I like that she is Beth's lowest point, even though I hate it as, like, a queer person.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of stuff where, like, queer people in this show are a little bit worse than others, even though everyone pretty much ends up being a fine human.
Yeah, none of them are necessary.
Everyone, like, is all right.
No one in this, aside from maybe Mr. Wheatley, the adoptive father, no one is truly, like, a villain in this.
Mm-hmm.
Borgov is an antagonist, but he's respectful.
He's a very admirable adversary.
Yeah, and even the people who start off as antagonists, no one's really a villain. And yeah,
like, Harry doesn't take her seriously at first at all.
Right.
Like, right. He yawns all throughout their match, and she beats him, and then he becomes, then he gains a lot of respect for her and kind of shifts his tracks.
There is a weird element where it's like, you have to beat me to earn my respect, mm-hmm. which is, I don't know, because it does happen with a lot of the male characters. Like,
it Harry makes sense in chess, though.
And Benny, and then there's that older Russian former grandmaster that she plays who like, at first seems to be a little dismissive, and then at the end he's like, you, my dear, are a marvel, or something like that. And it's like, yeah, I mean, the point, this is basically a sports anime, and so, like, she's got a list of competitors that she has to beat as she rises up the ranks. And I get, like, that it's got that vibe of, like, once I beat my competitor, then they join my clique. Is, again, it's very, like, it's very sports anime. But, like...
yeah, but also, like, that guy as well, that teacher from when she was a child, also felt so scary for her to be around. As a viewer, I was terrified that he was going to pull something. Just the way they film stuff.
Which teacher are we talking about?
Mr. Scheibel's gym teacher friend who has the chess club in the under,
yeah,
in
yeah.
the other school.
Mr. Gans.
Yeah.
He's the high school chess club coach.
That first, like, the way they frame scenes are so predatory.
Yes.
But nothing happens and we're proving wrong. And I don't know if that's something that carries on from the book or not. And I'm actually very curious about that.
I don't know. And I wonder why. I mean, like, part of it, I guess, is the idea that, like, she is very vulnerable at times. You know, she's, as much as she is, like, a powerful chess prodigy, she is still, in a lot of these scenes, just with Mr. Gann, she's, like, I don't know, like a 12-year-old girl. Like,
mm-hmm.
you know, the power differential is still there. And I guess maybe that's why it's filmed that way, to show, like,
yeah.
just that as good as she is at chess, she's still... And she's very naive. Like, she doesn't seem to recognize that, like, being alone with an adult male stranger could be dangerous for her. Mm-hmm.
I do think that a lot of those scenes start off like that because we're meant to feel exactly as she feels.
Yeah.
Because she's very much alone in this world for almost the entirety of the show. And I like that. But also it brings so many different themes that sometimes blur the story in a way that maybe they don't intend for it to go. Which is fine for the most part. Like, I really do appreciate that. Yeah, that is what she would have felt like if she was in a basement with crappy lights, with a strange man playing chess. Like, yeah, that's terrifying.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know how I feel about it. I both really like that they've managed to do that, but also maybe because it was, like, way too good at doing that, that I felt too uncomfortable. I don't know.
Mm. No, I see what you mean.
Are chess... it's not a segregated sport, right?
There are. I know this because I don't know why, but I know some basics of it. Yeah, because I'm a huge nerd. There are separate brackets for women, but it's not necessarily segregated. Like, you don't have to, I don't think. And there's separate rankings for women. So there is some separation, but I don't think it has to be separated.
Okay, I see.
Yeah.
So it makes sense for, like, I mean, just culturally, for the guys to not really take her seriously until she beats them. Because we have that moment of, I think throughout the show, almost every single person she beats, we have that moment of them not taking her too seriously, of them just like playing around with her. And then when they start to notice that they are losing, that's when they get super serious.
Yeah.
Except for Borgov. He never underestimates her.
Yeah, which is nice. And I do think this carries on today because, like, I don't know offhand who the reigning women's champion is, but I know the male champion is Magnus Carlsen offhand.
Like, that is wild.
And you, that I know that?
Yeah.
No, like, it's a big deal, and he's, I don't know, he's kind of a person, but, like, you don't know who the women's champion is, and, you know, I can name some of the other, you know, former best male players. There was Garry Kasparov, and... Oh, who was, I don't know. Like, the point is, I feel like there was Bobby Fischer. That's the other one I'm thinking of. And they become kind of known names, whereas who knows who the good, there's that one Iranian woman who was a big deal because she didn't want to wear a hijab while playing chess, but I don't know her name, and I don't think she's the best. I don't know. Now I'm going to Google it. Who's the best women's chess player?
I think a lot of it has to do with, I think, like, we all know it has to do with, like, gender expectations and cultures and stuff. And probably it's so ingrained in the sport that by this point it's still not very easy to make your way up through it, through the ranks.
Yeah. The best woman, generally considered the strongest female chess player of all time, is Judy Polgár of Hungary. She's Hungarian. She was the youngest grandmaster, breaking the record previously held by Bobby Fischer.
Cool.
And the only woman to have won a game against the reigning world number one player and has defeated 11 current or former world champions, including Magnus Carlsen.
Nice. Those are all of the three names you named.
Yeah. Well, cool. Yeah. And yet no one knows. Like, I had to look her up. Mm-hmm. What the heck?
Yeah. We see a lot of that in the show. I get why they do it. I think they do it too accurately. And I don't like feeling what she feels in the scene is my conclusion to this.
Yeah.
To this argument. Okay. To this hypothesis. The essay is finished. We can move on to other characters. Thank you for listening.
This is not the end of the podcast.
Not the end of the podcast, though.
We haven't even talked about her mom, Alice.
Yeah, I was about to pivot to that. I was going to say she has massive daddy issues, but even bigger mommy issues.
Yeah, because it turns out the mom intentionally tried
to kill the two of them.
Her
mother was very troubled.
Yeah.
She was definitely mentally sick. Beth she's probably
a, well her mom's a genius. She has a PhD in math and from like
doesn't she have like Cornell? Two or three Cornell. Or something
I don't know. She's just like, she's a professor, she's got a bunch of degrees, I think, and she's so smart and so brilliant, and then she spirals downward, kind of like Beth will later do. But like, I think the difference is that Beth has friends that will help her out of it. She has Jolene, she has Harry, she has Benny, and Alice doesn't have those people.
And Beth's dad just kind of gave up really quickly on her too.
Yeah.
So we can tell what kind of person he is and was with Alice just from that encounter. Like, he attempted to take Beth away from her, saying that, you know, it's not a good environment for a child to grow up in. But she said go away, and he did.
Yeah. This is a very sad story.
She spirals after her adoptive mother dies, right? That's when she really starts to kind of over-abuse. Yeah. When Alma dies, that's when she starts to really
go off the rails. There's that scene where she's taking out her trash and it's just like all wine bottles and her neighbor's just like looking.
Yeah, and she's like in a slip or something, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of very sad to see because she's still very, very young. And that's when Jolene comes back and kind of puts her back together. But
yeah,
others try before and it does not work at all. Like Harry comes over, right?
Yeah.
Is that when they sleep together?
I don't remember. I know that I remember he calls her from a payphone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it must be then because she has the, you know, like the house open.
Yeah.
And he comes and stays with her for like the summer. And then he just like leaves one day because she's such a mess, I think.
He doesn't disappear. They like talk about it. But
yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of like a series of things that happen for Beth to snap out of it and to realize that, hey, this is not sustainable or good, and I'm going to ruin every single thing in my life.
Yeah.
Because she couldn't compete in that state. She was always high and drunk.
And she goes to that, like, tournament in Kentucky, right? And, like, while she's at her lowest point and basically just, like, I mean, she does fine in the tournament, but she's clearly just a mess.
Yeah, emotionally.
Yeah.
I think that's the tournament that we see her at her worst behavior and most disrespect.
Yeah.
In a tournament. And, like, it's not a good look.
Oh, no, wait. She doesn't even compete, does she? She, like, goes to the tournament and then, like, just leaves, I think, or something like that.
Man, I don't remember. Like, chess is... That whole world is so mysterious to me that I had no idea where she was at any time, playing against who. I was just there along for the ride.
But the one thing the show does well, so talking about some mechanics here, I think it does do a good job of like portraying chess in an accessible way. And this is not an easy thing to do necessarily when you're showing like a very cerebral game. Like, it's easier with sports when you can have, like, a scoreboard and mm-hmm. you can show, like, even if someone doesn't know the rules to football, but you can see that, like, the team of the protagonists is down by 10 points and it's, you know, there's 5 minutes left. But chess, it's much harder. I mean, unless one side loses all their pieces and the other side has a bunch of the pieces still, it's so hard to portray who's actually winning because so much is about positioning and mm-hmm. what trades you make of pieces that it's really hard, you know, to look at a chessboard if you're not someone who's experienced, and I'm not someone who's experienced, and so, but I know of this conceptually, I just don't know how to do it. Like, it's hard to look at a chessboard and know who's winning. And so, like, the fact that they manage in this series to accurately portray, or not accurately, but like dramatically portray, mm-hmm. like, you see who has momentum, you see who's feeling good about it, you see who's, you know, the underdog, you get that comes across really well through how the acting and the staging and even just the camera angles, like, they do such a good job. And it's so hard to do, and I'm trying to think of, like, I don't know, I'm trying to think of other examples. I feel like the first thing that comes to mind is how, what was it, Casino Royale with Daniel Craig as James Bond portrays poker, which is another game where it's not necessarily clear, like, who's winning necessarily until the very end. And another, you know, I guess it's a movie, but it's another media that like shows how how you can like portray something like this, a game that is hard to follow at times, in a way that like makes it dramatic. And so that's the thing, like, neither of us are big chess players, but like, it's clear when you're
Speak
watching
for yourself.
The show. Okay. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to assume. I know you're a Russian, so
yeah,
it's
play
in your,
chess
it's in your blood
every day. Every
you woke
morning.
Up with your hand on a pawn and it just went from there.
Yeah. The queen is right next to me.
You are the queen's gambit.
I am not. I was joking, everybody. I don't play chess. I know how to, but I don't.
Okay. But, I mean, same. I did chess club in elementary school enough to know that I am not good at it. I'm not suited for it. I'm too impatient. But I like games that are visceral and immediate.
True. It all has to do with the way the crowd reacts and how the actors make their expressions. And
but
everyone
I think it's
did a
also the
job.
Camera angles, too. Like, we there, don't sell it short.
Yeah.
There's more to it.
No, yeah,
like,
yeah.
I feel like I'm being, like, silly, but no, it's...
Yell at me.
I'm yelling at you. I'm so mad at you for not respecting the camera angles. That was a very long, that felt like a 10-minute rant about, like, they portrayed chess well. And that is my TED Talk. Thank you for attending.
And, that was a beautiful rant. And
thank you.
For the final tournament, Beth is not on any drugs. She's not inebriated. And
yeah,
she faces
sober.
Off against our good boy Borgov. And wins, and that was a very, very good match. Like I would have been bored out of my mind watching that live, listening to it live on the radio, the way it was broadcasted. But dang, was it fun to watch on screen.
I wonder if that really happened. Like, did they used to broadcast chess matches on the radio?
Probably.
Sorry, that was a total aside. Yes, but like, I don't know, like, it's just amazing to think about, like, a bunch of people, like, huddled around the radio with, like, the chessboard in front of them, like, moving the pieces as they call out the moves. Anyways, that final match, it's just so well done from start to finish. The build-up for it, she gets her resolution with Towns, because I think the Russians kind of sent him there, I think, to distract her. They didn't know he was gay.
You're all about the conspiracies.
But it's totally makes sense. Doesn't someone even warn her that, like, Russians are going to try and distract you? And then suddenly Towns is in her hotel room, basically. It's like,
Towns is in town,
yeah. And then, that final match. And then I love at the end where, again, she's with this like American diplomat guy, and he's like, oh, we're gonna do all this stuff and you get to meet with the president and blah 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 media tour. And then she's just like gets out of the car to just go play chess with some like random Russians on the street. And it's just that defiance of like expectations and her rejecting, like, she's not here to be at the beck and call of any man. She is here to play the game that she loves and to play it well. And I just love that ending, and also that terrifyingly intense stare that she does, and that's like the end. If I were sitting next to someone who gave me that stare, I would just crumple into a ball of dust.
Yeah, it's intense.
It's so intense. Anya Taylor-Joy is spectacular in this.
She's very, very good at it.
Yes.
Beth always feels very feral to me. Like, she's always immaculately dressed and she looks well put together, but at any second she can snap. Like, it's so visible on the screen.
Feral is such a good word for it. Yeah. Or like predatory, like, which is interesting because we were talking about the other scenes that were portrayed, but she's like, when she's behind the chessboard, she becomes the like apex predator.
Absolutely. I feel like this is the only place where she's in control in her life up till a pretty late point in the show before she spirals. Like, it's the only place where she felt like she had everything the way she needs it to be, whereas everything in her life was so tumultuous.
That's a good point. Yeah, definitely, like, chess. And it makes sense, like, when your life is such a mess with, you know, multiple parental figures dying, and like, I could see why chess is so appealing too, because it's just like, it's structured, it's highly structured.
Yeah,
there's x number of pieces. Was it 16 pieces on each side? Gosh, I hope I'm right. Chess people don't make me feel like
an
idiot.
Math correctly.
There's 16 pieces on each side, and they can move a set number of ways. So technically, you know, like there's a finite number of possible moves. And so like that structure, those rules, that definition is like something that she doesn't have in the rest of her life. And so that's why it's so appealing and why she can lose herself in it.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. I get that. Yeah.
It's a very good show. I like that they have Jolene snap her back to it.
Yeah.
Not only that, but like Jolene is the one who tells her that Mr. Scheibel dies, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's also a sobering moment for her because she owed him money that he gave her to enter her first tournament.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that. He does do that.
We see that he has every single article about her, that he's been keeping track of her career and cheering her on. And you can see that just kills her because she never did pay him back. And for him, it was probably nothing. Like, I doubt he had any bad feeling whatsoever about that, like, about her not getting back to him.
Yeah.
But from her end, that I think that was the most sobering moment of her life.
Definitely. Oh, gosh. Yeah. Man, yeah, that must have felt awful.
And, like, okay, I really love that, though, because I think at that point she realizes that just how many people are in her life for her who want what's best for her. Because all of them come through in these moments of her lowest emotional states throughout the show. There are always people going to help her whenever she needs that help.
Mm-hmm.
When she's training, when she's falling apart, when she's winning, they're there too. They don't like abandon her when she's at her best either. And that's pretty much every single character we meet in this show. And like, yeah. I don't know, it's just so feel good.
Yeah, this is such a good show. And it was so, it came out, I think, in October 2020. And it, you know, like the pandemic was picking up again after, you know, kind of a bit of a lull in the summer. And I feel like it was something that, like, I needed in my life. The show about, like, friendship. But, like, the friendship is also very long distance at times. You know, there's the part where, like, at the end where all her friends call her up and give her advice in the final match, and it just hit close to home and felt like something. It felt very timely for something set in the 1960s,
and it was one of those shows that like it was a very muted type of exciting.
Yeah.
And I feel like everyone at that point didn't want any more excitement in their life.
That's true.
And like it was a very good level of just watch the show, get lost in it for however many episodes, and then you're done. And like,
yep.
It was a very neatly wrapped little present.
Yeah, it's not going to go on for 6 seasons. You don't have to like wait to see how it ends. It just ties itself up.
It has 6 or 8 episodes.
I think I want to say 8, but maybe 6.
It's 7 episodes. Wow.
Okay.
Right between those two.
Right in the middle. Okay. Yeah. It doesn't overstay its welcome. You know, it moves pretty swiftly, too. If you haven't watched it, it's so good. I want to rewatch it again soon. I don't know, but like part of me is like, I enjoyed it. There's some things that I watch or experience once, like Disco Elysium, where I'm just like, the moment where I experienced this was like the moment I needed to experience this, and experiencing it again almost feels like it would take something away from it. But I love it. Like I absolutely adore Queen's Gambit. Don't get me wrong.
There are very few things that I rewatch or reread or whatever because I don't know. That's just not my thing. I kind of get bored the second time around. But I feel like I could watch this again, especially if it's like with friends or with other
people. Yeah, that's always this thing. I was like, if I was like selling this on, oh God, I just bumped my mic, so this is going to be bad. If I was like sat down with someone, I don't know, like one of our friends, and they're like, oh, I haven't seen Queen's Gambit. Why would I want to see a show about chess? That sounds boring. Yeah. I would like put it on and be like, no, we're sitting down.
We have to watch it right now.
I'm making some popcorn and we are watching this. We don't have to watch all of it because, you know, it's, don't know. I feel like it's definitely not one that you binge as much. Like, I feel like I watched like an episode a day and that worked well for me. But like, it's so good and you're going to watch an episode or two and you're going to be hooked.
Yeah, I think the only thing that I can rewatch constantly is Fifth Element.
Okay, yeah, like I can rewatch like Marvel movies and whatnot. Like,
nah, never. Like once no. and done.
Okay, fair enough. I think that's a good note to end on.
Yeah, let's end the Queen's Gambit goofy, episode on this,
talk about Marvel
Fifth Element and Marvel movies.
We need to talk about the Fifth Element. I don't know if it's explicitly queer.
We have to talk about it. It's made so for good. Us.
Yes. Anyway.
That cherry scene. Anyway.
Thank you for tuning in. This has been In Media Les. We have some social media.
We do.
We do have social media. We are at In Media Les on Twitter, Instagram, and Pinterest. We have a subreddit, r/InMediaLes. We have a website, InMediaLes.com, where you can check out our episodes. And you can email us at InMediaLes@gmail.com. If you email us a question or comment, we'd be happy to share it on our show if you are okay with that. And thank you so much for tuning in.
Yeah, we'll see you in the next one.
God bless you.
This Christian server. I like that she has to go through the arc of becoming a drug addict and thinking she has to do it to do dice well. To do dice well. Wow, I'm tired. To play chess well. Jeez, Louise.
This is going to be a good episode, I can tell already.
Uh-huh. We're not... Look, we were not under any substance. This is all endomorphins. Endorphins. Endomorphins. Endomorphin Power Rangers.
That's, yeah, I was going to say, that sounds like the
I should have gone to bed earlier.
How did you go to bed?
Like 3:30? Oh, a little later, maybe 4.
I went to bed at like midnight because I was so tired. Because
you're smart and I don't make good decisions. Anyway, sorry.
Okay.
Getting back to my Power Ranger Beth.